Okay, so metta meditation. When we when we come to start metta meditation, there are a number of crucial conditions that we need to establish. And because metta meditation is first and foremost an antidote to anger, then we have to, before we start metta, we have to, as much as possible, make sure our mind's free of anger. And so the preliminary or the foundation for metta is a practice of one of the great preliminaries. The great foundations of metta practice is the practice of kanti, of patience, patient endurance, acceptance, which is a translation I like the best. Acceptance. If it's hot or it's cold, if it's food that we like or we dislike, if it's a person that we like or we dislike, we just accept. So it's not just anger which is the problem that is dealt with in metta, and in the Visuddhimagga, it describes that metta has a near enemy and a far enemy. And I can't remember which one's around now. Oh, I got confused. Anyway, I think the near enemy of metta is lust. Okay, so these are like the two aspects of what we usually lump together in English and we call love. And part of love is metta, and part of love is lust. And so the basic distinction between the two is that metta wants to give, and genuinely wants the genuine happiness of the other person, of the beloved. Whereas lust wants to get gratification from the beloved, wants to use them. But because they often come together and they're closely linked, so this is like the near enemy, it's something we have to be careful of. Far enemy is hatred. And the other problem with these two emotions is that they're a pair. They go together. Greed and hatred go together. They morph into each other's opposite. So somebody who's very greedy for something gets very angry when they can't get it. Somebody who's deeply in love with somebody gets very jealous when another person gets close to that person, and so on and so forth. So these things are constantly flipping over from one to the other. So you need to investigate in yourself and understand your own emotional ecosystem, emotional environment. I somebody who buys into preferences and favoring and opposing? Or am I somebody who's able to suspend favoring and opposing and just be, just know, just accept? There's this beautiful attitude of poise, which is often found in the suttas, where somebody would be listening to teachings of another sect, and they think, well, and this is phrased, without accepting or rejecting, we should find out the meaning of this. So this is always the way to think about it. We're neither affirming, going to one side, nor are we going to the other side, rejecting, but we're inquiring, we're open. And from that posture, anything is possible. So we need to have that coolness and equanimity that allows us to suspend judgment, that allows us to give some space around our likes and dislikes. And so this helps us very greatly to develop our metta, helps us to develop a more mature emotional response. One that's not based on personal favoritism, personal likes and dislikes. Because metta, and the real meaning of metta, sabbe satta, we start out with oneself, we gradually extend that to a loved person, to a neutral person, to a disliked person, until sabbe satta, all beings. Why do we do it like that? We do it like that because that's how the mind works. That's how our emotions evolve. We begin when we're children, we have the attachment to ourselves. Gradually we develop the attachment to the mother, to the family. We have like our little tribe, and we love them. As we grow up, start to have friends outside of the family. We start to make contacts at our school through playing sports. Eventually we get older, we fall in love, form our own family, and so on and so forth. So the period during our life is this like extension of that sphere of emotional concern. And as we become more fully human, we extend our sphere of concern beyond just our acquaintances to those people we don't know. We realize that, that nameless child in Indonesia, or that nameless grandmother in India, that she's also as worthy of love as my own mother, as my own child. And so we gradually learn to extend that. We begin to understand that all people are worthy of love. And at last we're able to realize that there's nobody, even those people that we detest, even those people that stir up feelings of anger within us, even they are worthy of love, and we are capable of loving them. That's how the mind works, that's how the emotions develop. It's the natural course of emotional maturity. And so in developing our metta in this way, we are consciously choosing to follow along with this pattern. So it's not an arbitrary pattern. It's one which is selected specifically to develop our mind in the most natural and most powerful way. So when we come to sit metta meditation, we should do so with a mind which is relatively free of strong emotional pulls, one way or the other, strong greed or lust or strong anger or something like that. It doesn't mean we have to be completely equanimous, but just generally speaking, you know, reasonably in a calm state of mind. If our mind's still very agitated, very disturbed, very angry or something like that, then best to do something else. Do some walking meditation, or just go for a walk in the bush or something like that, and get yourself into a reasonable state of mind first, and then come and sit and do metta meditation. When we first do the metta, we don't rush into metta, don't try to force it, but spend a period of, say, 5 to 10 minutes just developing just the silence of the mind, the mindful awareness. And this is very similar, or basically the same as what Ajahn Brahm teaches, is the practice of silent awareness of the present moment at the start of doing breath meditation. So if you're used to practicing like that, then just do it like that. Also, Ajahn Chachai said that, for example, if you do something like Goenka technique or Mahasi technique, if you're used to those kinds of practices, then just do that for a while. Or that kind of Zen kind of thing, or whatever. Many different kinds of mindfulness practice. And that's all we're doing at this stage, just getting a sense of where you're at, a sense of where your body's at, a sense of where your mind's at, where your thoughts are at, where your emotions are at, a sense of the movement or whatever of energies in the body and these kinds of things. That's all. And do that for 5 to 10 minutes. Usually after 5 to 10 minutes you'll find that the kind of the more active energies and so on in the body will resolve themselves, calm themselves down. You'll find your posture will settle into a reasonably stable position, and the kind of the initial kind of shock or reverberations of thought that you've been carrying around will be able to die down a reasonable amount. And then when you're reasonably steady and focused, then we start the metta meditation. So to start that, then focus the mind. Usually you can focus the mind in the heart, although it doesn't really matter whereabouts in the body that you focus your mind. But it is important that the mind is focused inside the body. So this is one of the very distinctive, important features about Ajahn Mahachachai's meditation system, is that we're developing metta always focused inside your body. And he's very concrete about this. Actually, what he recommends, and I don't teach this too much in the guided meditations because it gets a little bit complicated, but what he actually started recommending the last couple of times I've been with him is to start out after your period of mindful awareness to then do a visualization of your skeleton. Go through all of the bones in your skeleton one by one, very slowly and carefully, and visualize that. But as well as visualizing it, also knowing it, being aware of the physical feeling or sensation of the bones. If you can't do that, then just try using imagination. Imagine, for example, what would happen if your spine wasn't there. Maybe some of us, when we're sitting in meditation, if our spine wasn't there, nothing much would change. But anyway, and so you just get a feeling, and you actually realize that you can actually feel your bones when you're sitting there. It's one of these things which becomes so normal that you don't notice it, but actually you can feel the sensation of your bones inside your flesh. And so get a good idea of what the skeleton is. Again, this is not necessarily very profound meditation at this stage, but just getting an idea of that, and then spreading the metta through the skeleton. Okay? So when you're doing metta for yourself, just spreading it through your whole skeleton, bone by bone. Okay, and so that way is like intensifying and making that aspect even more concrete, more solid. So the metta is very solidly, very clearly grounded in your body, not woofily and floating up in the air. So you're wasting your time. There is, even though we complain about the translation concentration for samadhi, but there actually there is something to it. There is something about samadhi which arises from like a strength of the mind and a clarity. And even though we don't want to force that or get any tension involved there, but there is that powerful focus of mind. So placing your mind inside your body, then you say the words, "May I be happy." And I did this metta retreat at Wat Buddha Dhamma, and somebody said, I don't like the word "may." And somebody else said, I don't like the word "I." And then somebody else said, I don't like the word "happy." And I said, well, maybe the problem isn't the words. It doesn't matter. Just keep it simple, yeah? May I be happy, it's fine. Don't be complicated about it. You shouldn't. When you start out, the first thing you do is you do this very, very carefully and very systematically. The first thing you do is just say the words to yourself. Pronounce them clearly and distinctly, like Shakespeare. Okay? That's what Ajahn Chah Chai said. He said, like Shakespeare. All right? So you can imagine for yourself what that means, but I'm sure the idea is that there's like a... It's again, it's this idea that it's not this kind of vague and kind of woofily kind of thing that's just kind of drifting around somewhere, but it's like it's a clear, distinct voice in your mind. May I be happy. May I be happy. Not too fast, not too slow, quite regular. Okay? Now that... that clarity and attention to the mere sound and the mere articulation of the words. This is one of the things. In doing this, you're building up what we call the vitaka, that the jhana factor of vitaka, which is like the application the initial working, placing of the mind. And then when you do that, you keep on going with those words again and again and again. Steady, 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 steady. Okay? And keeping on them steady. Don't worry about the feeling of metta. Don't worry about anything like that. Just first of all, get the sound right. Work on that for a good few minutes. Keep on saying that. When you get the sound right, then the next thing, worry about getting the steadiness of it right, the firmness of it right, the concreteness of it right. Put effort into that. Make sure that it works. And then that steadiness is the vichara, is the jhana factor of vichara. Okay? And this is what's going to build up an energetic and sustained concentration. Okay? And again, all of these things, this initial groundwork that you're doing, is what's going to make your concentration go deep. This is similar, or it's analogous to the stages in doing breath meditation, where you're just sort of establishing mindfulness on the feeling of the breath coming in and out, and just continually bringing attention back to the breath like that. So this is like a similar stage of meditation, and has a similar result. But you're doing it in a different way, that's all. So as you keep on saying the words again and again and again to yourself, then gradually, when you're confident of the enunciation of the words to yourself, then gradually remind yourself of the meaning of them. So you start putting the kind of the feeling into the words. And again, for me, this process is, it reminds me of the process of learning a piece of music. I mean, when I would study classical guitar, that you'd get a piece of music, and the first thing you have to do is just figure out what the notes were, and figure out where your fingers are supposed to go, and then keep on sort of practicing that and learning that, and then after a while, you've got that worked out, and then you have to get it fluid, so you have to be able to get it kind of reliably and be able to do it each time. And then when you can do that, then you start to get a sense of, well, what is the feel of the piece of music? And you can actually start to play the music. That's how I would learn it. You'd learn playing classical guitar. So it's a similar kind of thing. Once that groundedness of it is there, then you're starting to get a feel for it. What does it mean? What does metta mean? Don't be thinking about it, but you're just bringing up the reflection in your mind. And there isn't any need to philosophize about it. There isn't any need to talk about it too much. We know what it means. You know what love means. You know what that pure metta means. And we all have a longing for that. We all have a longing for that real happiness. So just to kind of remind yourself of that. Keeping the mind focused inside your body. Each time if your mind drifts outside your body, keeping on bringing it back in. And then when the feeling of metta arises, just watch for that. Watch for where the feeling comes. Now that's something which is very, very... All the stuff that we've done up until now is pretty much anybody can do it, yeah? And it's pretty much, you just sit down there and you do it, and it's pretty straightforward. And this next bit is very, very personal, very individual. Where does the feeling of metta come from? How does that feeling arise? And that's totally individual. It happens to everybody in a different way. Some people, it's very, very easy. For myself, when I started doing this practice, that my problem was that the feelings would come, the rapture would come, and it was very, very strong, very overpowering and overwhelming, right from the beginning, from the first time I started doing it. And so I had to sort of keep on working for a long time to calm it down and make it more even and soft and gentle, and that was my problem. I'd get overexcited. And everybody has different things. Some people can do that meditation for ages and they never get any feeling of metta. They feel very, very dry emotionally. There's nothing there. So I'll talk about that a little bit later on, some things you can do about that if that's a problem. But one thing that you should all know is that you all have metta. Whether or not you can feel it, whether or not you can get in touch with it is a different matter. That's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to get in touch with it. But you all have it. Don't doubt that. This is part of the human mind. Now, if you, when you're meditating and you feel the feeling of metta coming up, then just watch where that feeling comes up, wherever it might be, in your left earlobe, or in your heart, or in your whole body, or whatever. Not outside the body, keep on bringing it back into the body. Actually, of course, it's in your mind. It doesn't really matter where it's in your body, that's just perception. It's your perception telling you that it's in a certain place or not in a certain place. It doesn't matter. But wherever it is, just keep your mind on that place and then holding it very, very gently. Yeah? And so imagine like you're holding a little baby. Yeah, so you're just holding a little baby. You're very, very gentle. You wouldn't let go of it, yeah? You wouldn't leave it behind on the bus. But you wouldn't hold it tight or crush it. Yeah? Or else the simile the Buddha uses of holding a quail. So you're holding a little bird in your hands. So you hold it so carefully so it won't fly away. But if you wouldn't hold it tight and crush it. So that's how, that's that fineness of mind which you need to develop. So this is like the next stage. So we've gone through the words of metta, saying the words of metta. We've gone through staining the words of metta. We've gone through the meaning of the words of metta. Those three stages. And then we're talking about the feeling. We've got the arousing of the feeling, actually getting the feeling happening. And the next stage is, how do we pay attention to that feeling? What is the quality of attention that we bring to bear on the feeling? Okay. So the quality of attention that we should bring to bear on the feeling, it should be gentle. It should be engaging, but not excited about it. Okay, so not pushing in too much and making too much of it, but not too far back and too bored with it. Okay, if you're finding that the feeling is too intense, then step back a little bit. Okay, so maybe, for example, you find that it's a very strong feeling arising up in your belly. Okay, so just step back from that a little bit and watch like the whole body with that feeling sort of in the middle of it rather than being too much inside it. On the other hand, if the feeling is very, very weak or very dim, then go in closer with the mind. Just step in a little bit closer and just sort of get a bit more intimate with it. But not pushing, but just going in there very gently. So there's different ways of working with the feeling of metta. And that quality of attention will ultimately determine the success of your meditation. That's almost the most important skill to learn in meditation, is the quality of attention. What is the nature of the focus of mind that you're bringing to your meditation object? If you can't get the feeling of metta going at all, right? If you just meditate, nothing happens. May I be happy, nothing happens, okay? Well, first thing is just keep on going, all right? Just be patient. Don't expect results too quickly, okay? The second thing, if you've already been patient and you've done it, and you're beginning to get a bit frustrated or something like that, then there's various tricks you can use to help you get the feeling of metta. So these are only to be used if you need to. Actually, like metta meditation, the way that we're doing it here, like all the early Buddhist meditations, is very, very direct. And this is one of the great qualities that I really love about the early Buddhist meditations, is that they're totally direct. You're just dealing right with that emotion. You're dealing right with that state of mind. Or whatever it is that you're doing in your meditation, you deal with the breath, you're right there with the breath, and it's not kind of mediated by all of these concepts and so on. So you're not having to sort of imagine a deity which sort of represents or symbolizes metta or something like that. You just go straight to and deal with the feeling itself. And so it's very real because of that. But if the feeling doesn't come, then play around a bit. Okay, and there's various kinds of things which you can use that will that might help to bring that feeling about. And again, this is very personal, and you probably need to find your own. But just a few suggestions that I've heard from one time or another. One monk I know used to keep a photo of some baby lion cubs in his kuti, So he could always look at them because they were so cute when he couldn't get the metta going. Or you can keep a teddy bear in your kuti. So I bring teddies to my meditation retreat so people can love the teddy. Or another one is very good is to use some memory of a time when you've been very, very deeply loved, or a time when you have deeply loved somebody. So maybe a time when you were a child and when you were with your mother or something like that. And so some time when you felt that very deep, overwhelming sense of love, and just to bring that memory up. So if I think of that, one of the first things that comes to my mind is a particular, just a moment that really impressed me when I was in Bodhinyana and Bhante Gunaratna was visiting, and somebody had rescued a little baby lamb which was kind of injured and got lost in the far corner of the monastery, and some of the Anagarikas had found it and put it in a box with a blanket and were bringing it up to take care of it. And when Bhanteji saw that, he just immediately just went up to it and just so gently put his hand on the lamb's head, and just the gentleness and the love that came from him very spontaneously. I found that very, very moving. And so that's a moment for me which represents that very powerfully. So just like, you know, if you remember and think about all the wrongs that have been done to you, and the things that everybody's, you know, all the hard things that have been done to you, and so on, and that gives rise to feelings of hatred and anger, and kind of your old emotions of hate can be brought up again. And so too, if you use your memory to bring up those old thoughts of love, then they will come back to you. It's just a skillful way of using memory. So that's another one you can use. Another way you can do, another skillful means you can use is to think with gladness, and use like mudita, or think with gladness of all the good people who have been practicing, meditating, or just doing good things. You know, it doesn't have to be Buddhists or meditators, but it's all the people who are doing good things around the world, people who are working to support their family, people who are helping to save the environment, people who are trying to give medical care to people who need it. And just keep on thinking again and again and again of all the beautiful and kind acts which are being done every day all over the world. It's another good thing to do, another useful, skillful means. Or to recall all of the acts of kindness that have been done to yourself, and just to think about just to say to yourself, what kind things have people done for me? And it doesn't matter how small they are, even very, very simple ones, somebody making you a cup of tea, or opening the door for you, or something like that. It doesn't matter how big or how small it is, but just all of those acts of kindness create that wholesome direction in the mind. And another one you can use is if you really can't get the feeling of metta going, then just give up. And just admit to yourself, I'm a failure. I don't have any metta. My heart is an emotional wasteland. I'm a desert. Joy is not me. So I can't do metta meditation, but what I can do is I can pretend to do metta meditation. Okay, so I'm not going to do my metta meditation because I can't, but I'm going to sit here and act as if I was doing metta meditation. And so I'm not going to really wish myself that I was happy, but I'm going to just pretend that I'm wishing myself happy, and I'm not going to really feel metta, but I'm going to feel pretend metta. Okay? And so if you take that kind of playful approach to it, then sometimes that can work as well. And the play matter comes up, and then you think, well, what's the difference between this play matter and the real one? So these are all just ways you can use to sort of create that kind of positive or wholesome disposition in the mind. I'm sure you can all think of your own ones. Yeah, these are just a few suggestions. That's all. And if in your meditation, if you find that despite the practices and things that you've done before, if you find that your mind is still getting obsessed with thoughts of anger or hatred, then there are also many other skillful means you can use, and I would recommend having a look in the Visuddhimagga. It gives a whole a few pages, I think, of recommendations of different kinds of reflections you can use. If somebody's really annoying you or something like that, then it gives different suggestions for ways of reflecting and thinking about them and so on and so forth for dispelling those feelings of anger. So that's a useful collection of suggestions there. So let's assume that things are going okay. Got the feeling of metta going and managed to hold the mind on that, focus the mind on that. Now, if the preliminary work's been done reasonably well, that is to say, if you've managed to get that sense of equanimity and patience, you've developed the words of metta securely and clearly and steadily, the meaning of metta is reflection is coming in the mind, and the feeling of metta arises, and then you can sustain the awareness with that feeling of metta. Then, if all of those things are there, then that feeling of metta should start to sustain and to last for longer and longer periods. Maybe in the beginning it might just come up for a short little while, just for a few seconds maybe a few couple of minutes, and then go away. But as the mind becomes more used to it, more skilled, then that feeling will continue for longer and longer periods of time. Ultimately, you should be able to just keep it going indefinitely, really. It only maybe just fall away if you get tired or run out of energy. So the feeling of bliss and happiness is there, the mind's there holding it, and as the mind's there just holding that with the feeling, then gradually it has like a feedback effect, that attention you bring to it and the feeling of the coming back, and it will start to grow. The feeling will become brighter, it will become clearer, it will become stronger. And you just keep on going, keep on doing exactly as you were doing, until you can feel like that ball of radiance of metta as something that's quite strong and quite definite, quite secure. You can trust it. And when you get that feeling, and then you can sustain that feeling for roughly, say, 10 to 20 minutes, then take that feeling and then spread it out through your whole body. So when we say spread it out through your body, it just means spread it like you spread Vegemite on toast, yeah? Except no, not like Vegemite on toast, because it's thin and hard, isn't it? It's not thin and hard, it's like it's like something that isn't thin and hard anyway. like water soaking through a Wettex on the sink, yeah? And so you move your awareness all around. Just take your awareness. Because the feeling, the metta is actually in your mind, okay? The body is in your mind. The mind is in your body as well. But the body's in your mind. Everything you're experiencing is just in your mind. It's not a body. When you sit there, you experience it. It's not a body. It's an experience of a body. And so you move your that mind around, and as you move the mind around very gently and very slowly, then the feeling of metta gets taken around to all those different parts of the body. And again, if you're doing that and you come to a difficult part, so sometimes the difficult part would be usually either a place where there's some kind of physical pain or tension, or some part where you're holding like an emotional tension, okay? Now, if you come to those difficult parts, just leave them behind. Don't worry about them, okay? Do all the easy bits first. And then when you've done the easy bits, then at the last, come back to the hard bits, okay? And so you want to be able to spread that matter evenly through the whole body, so that you can, and then when you've done with spreading it and feel it moving through the whole body, then you just like bring the awareness back from that particular awareness to like an image of yourself or of your body sitting there, a whole body image filled with metta, and just bear that in mind. Again, not letting the feeling spill out from outside your body. That will dissipate your samadhi energy. And keeping that clear awareness. You know, imagine, say, a Buddha image, which is made of crystal, and which is lit from behind with a candle, and the whole thing would sort of glow with a gentle glow. That's the kind of thing that we're looking for. Just that gentle glow throughout your whole body. And if you can develop the metta like that and hold that and sustain that for, let's say, 20 minutes or something, then that's good. Yeah. Now, what will tend to happen, and what should happen ideally, is that when you've reached that stage, metta is through the whole body and it's held and sustained there, you're aware of the image of your whole body there, and then there'll come a time when it kind of clicks into place. And that time is semi-determined, semi-clear when that time actually happens. It's not entirely defined, but it's semi-defined. And you'll feel almost a bit like, things have come together. It's starting to work. So perhaps before, you were more feeling like mostly you were sort of trying to get, mostly you were sort of, you know, juggling and fixing and trying to get it to work, and only a lesser extent of it was the actual sort of the restful side of it. And now it's sort of shifted over, that balance has shifted. Now it's mostly kind of restful and there and present. And to a lesser extent, you're having to sort of, you know, your mind's wandering off and you're having to bring it back and these kinds of things. Okay? And so then you're sustaining that and it's rolling along fairly easily. So that stage, which is admittedly a bit ill-defined, is what we call Kanika Samadhi. And the Kanika Samadhi means temporary concentration. They translate it as momentary concentration, but that's actually a bit misleading. It actually should be more, it's just a short period of concentration. And the feeling of metta at that stage we call the ugaha nimitta, the learning or preliminary sign. Okay. Now the nimitta of metta is not so much a light like you tend to get in breath meditation. So breath meditation, nimittas can be very varied in breath meditation, but typically it'll be a light. In metta meditation, the nimitta is typically is more of a feeling, and the aspect of light and brightness is typically less predominant. Okay, but again, that's just a question of perception. Okay, there's no kind of reality to that. It's just the way you're looking at it. You can switch your mind around in metta meditation with a nimitta and then just look at it as light, and it will be there as light. It's just perception. Okay, but typically the main feature or the main aspect of it is a feeling of metta, is a soft, gentle feeling of love. And that feeling always has happiness and joy with it. If it doesn't have happiness and joy, then it's not real metta. Okay? So it has to have some happiness and joy. Now, if you get that feeling and sustain that for 20 minutes or so, then you're doing very well. And that's like the completion of what we call the first stage of metta meditation. So I've been talking for a little while already, so I might finish that talk for now, and maybe next week I can continue that and talk about the rest of the development of metta meditation. So I'll just leave that with you for now, and just if anyone has any comments or questions on that.